You know, I wonder what's going to happen to them someday when they're all in a hospital bed and they're all, you know, dying, you know, and they're dying from nothing. You know, it's like, what's wrong with you? Nothing. You're just dying. When you think about this concept of dying, isn't the most fearful thing? Didn't you do this when you were a kid? I certainly did. And I think about, okay, let's just say I'm going to be dead 1,000 years. I can handle that. But forever? And that whole concept of forever, and it's like never, and 1 billion years is going to go, and you go, ah, it's just too much. You just, ugh, you push that out. But you see, there's a part of you, even though it isn't well trained, there's a part of you that knows that you're eternal, that can never die. The part of you that's been with you since you were a little child. The part of you that looks out. You know, I was giving a talk up in Boston not too long ago, and my wife was with me, and I finished running, and it was in the morning, and it was about 5:30, 6 o'clock. It was just a real beautiful morning, a nice, cool, crisp morning in March up in Massachusetts. And I was running on a track across the street from the high school. And the hotel, my wife was standing in front of the hotel, saying, come on, let's go to breakfast. And I had just finished running. And she was waving to me. She said, come on, we've got to go. You've been out there for 2 hours. For crying out loud, come on. And so there was a fence between her and I. And I was running towards her, and I saw this fence. And the fence was about 3.5, maybe 4 feet high. And when I was in high school, I was a high jumper on the team, so a four-foot jump isn't a really big deal. And I ran up to the fence, and I hurtled over the fence. I just jumped the fence. And she screamed at me. She said, you can't do that. You're 55 years old. When you're 55 years old, you don't jump over fences. You're going to kill yourself. And I said, I forgot. And I did. I forgot. Because the part of me that has been in there looking out has never aged. It hasn't aged at all. It's the part of me that doesn't know anything about age. I mean, I look in the mirror and I look back and I see hairs falling out, you know. And I ask that metaphysical question, you know, what held it in yesterday? You know, something did. I don't know what it is. But there's a little boy in there, and there's a teenager in there, and there's a 30-year-old in there, and there's a 40-year-old in there. And I was walking along the beach not too long, and I saw this man. He was well into his 90s. I mean, he was like creaking along in the beach. And this woman walked by with this thong bathing suit on. Gorgeous, you know. And he was walking, walking, and all of a sudden when she went by him, he turned and he went, ah, and he looked. I could hurt his neck to look. But he had to look. And I said, it's a life sentence, you know. I mean, he doesn't know. I mean, the part of him that is looking and observing and noticing, the part that's over here on the left-hand side, hasn't aged at all. It's just the package that has. So the highest self is this. This fear of being alone, this idea that we're alone, when you know, as it said in the Course in Miracles, as I said earlier, if you knew who walked beside you at all times, if you knew that there is a force that is with you and walking with you at all times, you would transcend that idea, that fear, that you're alone, and you would know it. Carl Jung, who spent a good part of his life studying these ideas, who was a great teacher in my life, studied these ideas, and when he was dying, he was asked, do you believe there's life after death? Because he had studied about this and written about this, and he said, no. He said, I don't believe that. I know it. I absolutely know it. There is no doubt, you see. Because Jung said there are really four stages, if you will, or what he called archetypes, that we all go through as adults. And many of you listening here today on this program will recognize that the emphasis that I have placed over the years has shifted. And often ask why. And when I'm asked that question in interviews, I always say to the interviewer, it's because I have been through these stages, these archetypes. The lowest stage is what he called the stage of the athlete. And the stage of the athlete is a stage in which it's the time in our lives. This is not a put-down of athletes, by the way, or athletics. It's just an archetype for the time in our lives when our primary emphasis is on our physical appearance, what it looks like, how strong it is, how much it can lift, and so on, how fast it can run. It's the stage of our preoccupation with our physical body, how beautiful it is, how attractive it is. This is a lot of looking in the mirror time and so on in our lives. And I can remember being there in my life and having this as the primary focus of my life. What does my body look like? And I am this body. He said the second stage, the second archetype, is what he called the stage of the warrior. And he said this is the time in your adult life when you take your physical body out into the world and do with it what warriors do. And what warriors do is they conquer, they defeat, they compare. This is the age of the ego. This is the time in your adult life now when you put your attention on what's in it for me, what are my quotas, how much can I get, who am I better than. This is the time of we're number one. You see all of that all over the country, especially during football season with the kids putting, we're number one, we're number... It's the idea of having to compare yourself, of thinking about getting yours before somebody else gets it, that you're in competition with everyone else. There's only so much abundance. There's only so much that I can have in my life, and I have to get it before somebody else gets it. And if I don't, then they're going to get it, and so on. And so I have to defeat other people. It's the age of the ego. It's the time in our lives when we learn separation. I am separate from you. I am separate from everyone out there, and I have to get mine. Then the third stage is what Jung called the stage of the statesman. And this is the time in our adult lives when we shift our emphasis out of what's in it for me and stop asking the question, what are my quotas, and we begin to say, what are yours? And how may I serve becomes your mantra. And here is when you begin to have that paradox, that you begin to understand that all the things that you sought after when you were an athlete and when you were a warrior begin to show up in your life when you're a statesman in even larger numbers, but they show up in a way in which you're no longer attached to them. It's like, it's okay. The abundance shows up and you say, yeah, that's fine, and you let it flow because the nature of this divine organizing intelligence that is over on the left side of the room, this future pull, this potentiality, this part of you, this higher part of you, is one which has no boundaries to it. And it is not attached to holding on to anything. And so as a statesman, you begin to put your attention on serving others. And companies that do this tend to flourish much more than those who are most concerned about the bottom line. It's the time in our lives when we stop thinking about how much can I get from somebody else and instead say, here, can you take? Would you like some of mine? And then we find out when we do that, that more comes into our lives. And then Jung said that the highest stage, what he called the stage of the spirit, is the time in our adult lives when ultimately we begin to realize that we're none of the previous three. That we are not athletes, we're not warriors, we're not statesmen at all. That in fact we're not even human beings having a spiritual experience. Indeed, that it's the other way around. That we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And the quality of our human experience is one in which we can recognize our own divinity. And we know that this is not our home. We are, as Jesus said in the New Testament, we are in this world, but we're not of this world. And we come to know this. And therefore, we are capable of being in the world, filling out the forms, and doing whatever it is that we do in our lives, and recognizing at all times that we are not of this world. This is the time when we shift our awareness off of me and begin to get over here on the left-hand side and notice me. I now am no longer what I notice. I am the noticer. I no longer am what I witness. I am the witness. I'm no longer what I observe. I am the observer. And as you do this, you begin to live from the highest place. You're no longer the athlete, even though you might be athletic. You're no longer the warrior, even though you might be very competitive and you might have a whole lot of goals that you are working on. But that isn't your primary identification. You're not even the statesman who is serving and working to make the world a better place. You are that which is eternal. That which is always there, never ages, never dies, has no boundaries, and is your highest and your most sacred self. And it isn't just a matter of listening to this tape and saying, yeah, okay, I got that. It's a matter of living from that perspective. Detaching yourself from all that's on the right-hand side of the room, getting over here on the left, and looking over there and saying, how can I participate in manifesting what I desire and still maintain the sacredness of my life? And there's no inconsistency in asking for wealth or asking for abundance or asking for healing and believing that you can manifest it as long as you stay consistent with this principle and these other eight principles.